Y'all, hey, what's going on out there? Welcome to Let's Talk on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Mr. Talk, and man, do we have a show for you today. I'm telling you, man, I hope everybody's ready. We're going to learn a few things. We're going to dissect some things, but all in all, we're going to have a day with the late, great Maya Angelou. Yeah, man, we're going to talk about some poems, and we're going to listen to some, and, you know, we're going to talk about some things, you know, because this was a very, very deep lady, you know. There's a few poems that everybody's familiar with for the most part, you know. However, there are some other things, too, that some other poems that we're going to talk about, and I think today would be a lot of fun. I think so. You know, I don't foresee any need for argument or anything like that. You know, we should have a very, very nice conversation, you know, throw some thoughts around and let's see what we think, you know, because there are, man, I'm telling you, this woman here, I mean, man, she has so many poems and so many great ideas that, you know, there should be no reason why we should run out of things to talk about with this woman. I mean, Academy Award winner, you know, Medal of Arts winner for the government, for the president. You know, I mean, an actress, you know, a singer. I mean, what is it this woman couldn't do? You know what I mean? From all the way down from being abused to making herself a mute, not nobody, making herself a mute. And from that is where I know why the caged bird scenes comes from. So I'm really looking forward to the show today. I'm very excited about it. And I hope as you come in, for those that's not here yet, listening, trying to get here, and those that's already here, I hope you are as excited as I am, because I'm telling you, I'm really hyped about this thing. So, you know, and I think I got a couple of good clips I'm going to play here. She has one poem called "I Am Human," and I really love that. I do, and I'm going to play that for us a little later in the show. And it's amazing, man. I mean, I am really hyped about this thing. You know, it's because there are some times when we really do need to sit back and talk about these things. Too bad that in a lot of instances or cases, you know, it's once someone has passed on to the other side that we sit back and really pay tribute to them the way they deserve to be. You know, maybe that's just the way we operate around here on this plane of things, but we're going to work out. We're going to make it work today, regardless. We're going to pay tribute to this woman as she deserved to be. You know what I mean? All right, so for those out there that want to participate in the show, give us a call at 347-838-622. You can email me, ericlesstalk@gmail.com. Don't forget the chat room at www.blogtalkradio.com/Mr. Talk. And we always have a great conversation going on there, too. I mean, we don't even have, we just don't have the intellectuals on the line. We have them in the chat room. I got Antoinette, my chat room coordinator there. Hey, she handles things. So if y'all get out of line, hey, she got control, I'm telling you. So I don't have to worry about that either. I see I got my shotgun Cloud Nation Radio in the chat room also. And he's also on the line. We got Refine the Design. Hey, darling. And then we got the great Ron Rick on the show. What's up, Ron? How you doing today? You know what I mean? So, you know, I mean, we got everybody coming in. So before we go get any further into the show, let me bring my co-host, Akeem, man, better known as Cloud Nation Ray Cloud. I don't know why he's saying Cloud Nation Radio. So let me bring him in here. What's up, man? How you doing today?
Oh, man, I'm excited about talking about one of the great thought leaders, and really honoring her today as she should be noted. And I learned a lot because you told me to do my homework, and so I learned a whole lot in the last few days.
I know, right, man? I mean, you know, I was doing mine too. I had to go run out to Barnes and Noble to really get my research on, you know. And man, I'll tell you, I have learned so much, you know, just from that little bit that I have, you know, studied. And, you know, I have really come to respect this woman even more, you know, from her humble beginnings to where she, you know, where she was. It's just amazing, you know, but that goes to show, man, with, you know, if you strive to just strive to be you, you know, she wasn't nobody, you know, different. She was just her, but she had that drive in her that took her, you know, to the ultimate, to where she wanted to be. And that's always a good thing. You know what I mean? So, oh, man, I tell you. So, yeah, that's what we got going on. Oh, so while we waiting on everybody to come in, before I get to the clip that I want to start off with, man. So tell me what you learned about her a little bit. You know, what do you know about Miss Maya Angelou? Because that's who we're talking about today, y'all.
Well, before I get into the history aspect, when I think about her now, the more I've learned about her, because, you know, I knew a little bit, but I know more, and there's so much to learn about her. But one thing that comes to my mind is living out loud. She really did live out loud, and she is and was a beacon of hope. She was a thought leader. She was a curator of life and culture, a living time capsule. And just thinking about some of the things she's contributed to the world, it's like – she was like a glimpse at the rich nature of the finest qualities of humanity, you know, like a reflection of the wealth of Mother Africa and the richness of Black heritage. I mean, an echo of the prestige of our ancestry. I mean, she was definitely a phenomenal woman, phenomenally, definitely.
Man, I tell you, boy, you said a lot then. Man, did you say a lot then? Well, that's all good, though. And you're correct, though. You really are. And, you know, as we get to going through some of these clips and some of her poems, you know, I would like for everyone to, you know, remember that part of her. And as we discuss the different elements of the poems, you know, we're just not going to play them, but we're going to talk about the different elements and perhaps the meanings of what she was trying to get across. And, you know, because a lot of them actually can be placed into text, into examples that we're going through today. And, man, I'm telling you, it's just, whoo. I'm just going to, that's all I'm going to say. I mean, I am so hyped right now. It's just amazing, you know. And I want to thank my chat room coordinator, Antoinette, because she sent me something, man. And I think this is really disrespectful. I do think it's horrendous, horrible, whatever, you know, term you can use. Oh, Lord, let me calm down. Whatever words you can use to express your displeasure, you know, the West Marlboro Baptist Church planning to protest at Maya Angelou's funeral. You know, really, now then, if those that are not aware of who this church is, they are the ones that usually are protesting again, you know, at military members' funerals and things of that nature, you know, and they out there, man. That's all I'm going to say. In my opinion, they're out there. And, you know, I see no reason why they should be protesting, not just the military funerals, but especially not Maya Angelou, you know, because she was never one just for, you know, a particular ethnic group or race. You know, she really was for, you know, the humanity. You know, that's the best way to put it, humanity. You know, and for them to, you know, even think about disrespecting her like that, I think is just pitiful. And, you know, you know, I think we need to do some things. Hopefully, you know, this will not happen. But, you know, they are really, really, oh, my goodness, crazy. You know, let's see, I'm looking at the article now, and it says the church may be planning to picket the funeral of acclaimed novelist and poet Maya Angelou because she spent many of her 86 years on, oh, did they really say this? 86 of her 86 years on fags, favorite misdirection, pretending fagging off is like being black. What in the world does that mean? Akeem, have you any idea what that means? You know,
absolutely not. I think those people are extremists at a, you know, hyper extremists at that. You know, I mean, we always see these guys kind of pop up in the most inopportune moments to take advantage and exploit opportunities to be extremists. I mean, if you want to. A perfect example of extremely deranged, you look these guys up, and they'll probably pop up in the dictionary.
Man, I mean, that is that's pitiful. You know, for those that didn't understand what I was saying, I put some a part of the article in the chat room so you can read it. Maybe you can figure out what they're talking about, because I have no idea. It says the church is vehemently opposed to gay rights and somehow always finds a way to vent that opposition by protesting. They protest military members who've died in battle, regardless of their orientation or support for the LGBT community. Man, I tell you, these folk, you know, and I think these folk really need to find something else to do with their time. You know, I think this is an example of them just having too much time on their hands. You know what I mean? Oh, Lord, have mercy. Oh, good Lord. They say you should be hanging your heads in shame for such a thing. Oh, really? Oh, wow. This is crazy. In addition to her many accomplishments, Angela was a supporter of marriage equality for gay couples. She once phoned New York State Senator. I'm going to place all this in the chat room, man. I'm not going to insult y'all by reading it to you like this. I'm just going to place this into the chat room and let y'all go ahead and, you know, get y'all own, you know, opinion on what's going on with this group. But, you know, this is just crazy, man. Oh, wow. So, you know, so the Westboro Baptist Church, man, I tell you, they need help. They really do. If anybody needs Jesus, I think they do. Or whoever they do.
Yeah, they need something.
Oh, Lord, have mercy. Yeah, Ron, that's what you need to do. Hey, I've known about it earlier. I probably would have did it myself. Done the same thing, because this is just crazy. Anyway, so that's it. Let's see. We got chat room. We got people coming in the chat room now. Let's see. Enjoying Life has showed up. Guest 747 and 755 in the house also. And we got somebody on the line with their hands up. So let me bring them in and see what they have to add to the conversation right now. Hello, Joe. How you doing today?
I'm better looking than Joe.
Uh-oh. This Beasley. Beasley got the Obama phone today, too, because he got that little static going on.
You can't hear me clearly?
Okay, now I did. I don't know what you did, but I hear
you. Something about the phone. You know something? Well, I've been reading Maya Angelou quotes. I was reading them yesterday. She said a lot of things that I didn't know she said, like when someone shows you who they are, believe them, and a number of other ones. I suggest anybody Google Maya Angelou quotes, but I got to call you out on what I'm seeing as a bit of an inconsistency here.
Uh-oh. Call me out. Let's do it. You know.
All right.
You know
but don't shoot me or anything, because I word it nicely. Now the Westboro Baptist Church, you guys are right. They're out there, but they're really anti-gay. You know, they happen to be from Kansas.
Really?
But there are people that call into your show that have a strong anti-gay position and agenda. But you don't seem to have a problem when they champion, and they feel strongly about it, just like the Westboro Baptist Church.
Well, you know what, Mr. Beasley?
I don't say protest funeral is bad, but this person, but they would also object to Maya Angelou's views as well. And their opinion of Maya Angelou's views is more important. Remember what we talked about yesterday, what we touched on about people's biases clouding their whole vision? Now, obviously, there's more to Maya Angelou than her acceptance of gay people, okay? And she was before her time when she decided to embrace gay people. And I think she may have even been bisexual herself. I'm not sure. But may have been. But could you discount everything that she did because of her acceptance, because you don't agree with her about her position on gay people? Does that make her in the rest of her life a wash? And she's a pretty interesting person, too. You know, she's born in St. Louis, and when she was real young, she moved to San Francisco and went to school in San Francisco. Quit school when she was 15 and became a streetcar conductor. And then she moved and lived in Africa. She lived in Egypt and Ghana, and she met Malcolm X in Ghana and went to work with him. She's lived a real fascinating life.
Yeah, you're right. You know,
but I
don't
see any difference. I don't see any difference between the Westboro Baptist Church views.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people that call in here and push an anti-gay agenda, I don't see any difference.
Well, here's the difference, Beasley. You know, and I'm not for the gay life either. I've been very adamant about that. However, you know, I have the ability to look beyond, you know, that and realize that this woman had more going for her than just that little piece right there. You know, sometimes, as you say, you have to put your own prejudices aside and realize the good in some people. Now, in this case, this group is known for protesting, you know, soldiers coming back killed in battle. What does that have to do with anything? So they're more of a radical group. I'm not knocking them for what they believe. What I'm knocking them for is this lady is more than just, you know, gay, LBG, belief or acknowledgement or whatever you want to say. But, you know, this woman has done great things, and they shouldn't – it's just disrespectful. I'm just not going to try – I'm not going to put no more words. I'm just telling you straight up, it's just disrespectful. This woman spoke 6 different languages fluently, Beasley, fluently. Most of us can't even speak one language fluently. Let's let them talk about 6. You know what I mean? So I do believe that she deserves a little bit more respect than, you know, I hope they, you know, somebody, you know, taps them on the shoulder and say, look, y'all, you know, y'all need to slow this down. You know what I mean? Because this is just ridiculous. That's all I'm saying. But I'm glad you did bring that to my attention, Beasley, because, you know, I probably would have slipped by and not thought about it like that, but you're correct. But, you know, that's just the way I feel about it. Okay? It's that Bella Beasley. That's a Bella explanation.
Man, we all have our things. We all have some inconsistencies, some things that we might not even realize that we're doing. You know, just you know, I pointed it out not to attack you, but just to, you know, give you some food for thought.
Well, thank you, sir. But I was always over. But yeah, thank you though.
I'm not above reproach when I say something that may be hypocritical. or inconsistent. I'm not above that. I would like to learn. You know, the last thing I want to be in my life as a hypocrite is to walk it one way and talk it one way and walk it another. That's the last thing I want to be.
Well, you know what? As I said before, you know, I'm not hypocritical. I'm gonna tell you, yes, I'm against it. However, I think this woman has done, you know, she's done some great things that we shouldn't really, we should look beyond certain things. And that's with anybody to a certain extent. You know, I've come to the conclusion, even though I'm against it, you know, my belief and from what I've, you know, the way I've been raised and taught and what I believe in is, you know, everybody has to deal with whoever they deal with in the end, you know. And personally, you know, that's between them and God. You know, I don't condone it. I never will. But it's not my position to judge them either, you know, because that's, you know, that's just doing the same thing they're doing. So now we're going to keep on going. We're not even going to get caught up on that little piece right there, you know, because that's how we get derailed from something we want to do today to actually, you know, give some what word I'm looking for, y'all? To pay tribute to this wonderful woman. Hold on for a minute. I see you. I got Miss Antoinette with her hand up, and let me bring her in here for a moment. Hello, Miss Antoinette. How you doing today?
Hello, Mr. Talk. I know you said you wanted to get away from that, and I do also, but may I just revisit it for a second?
Okay, go ahead.
basically, the difference in people on the show there or anyone else that does not like gay people or, you know, have things to say about it is this woman is already deceased now. And to go to her funeral and the protest and everything is truly disrespectful. You know, if she was gay, I don't know if she was. I've never heard that before. But
you know,
her work speaks for itself.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's done a lot of things and made a lot of changes in her life. She ran a brothel. She was a stripper. But, you know, that's not what she ended up doing. She raised a child by herself. She's been married and everything else, you know, several times. So...
wow, you know, you know, and see, if you notice, the more we dialogue, the more things are coming out about how wonderful this woman was. You know, I mean, let's not beat up Beasley though, because he brought up a very good. I mean, he brought up some good points, and it makes sense. You know, some things that need to be clarified so everybody understand gets a better understanding of. You know, where we are and why we're disagreeing with what the Westboro Baptist Church is planning to do. So that's all I'm saying with it, and it works pretty good.
And I'm not taking any of this any kind of way personally at all. I just pointed something out. And I agree, of course, that's tacky. That's beyond tacky and disrespectful to protest anyone's funeral. I mean, that's ridiculous. But this church has seen... as ridiculous. But for those that hold these views and hold these views, and they're entitled to hold those views, but when it becomes an agenda, when you're pushing it so hard and you feel like you have the, and you feel like that you're right and going to protest someone's funeral, I mean, where does it end? When someone feels so strongly about something, they'll go to, you know, great extremes. People that are against abortion that will shoot abortion doctors. I mean, people...
Well,
get a little...
excuse me, Beasley, but that's completely off the topic. The topic was on my
hold on
Angela.
A second. I'm putting it in relation as to people that have an extreme view that go to extreme measures, that when someone is so consumed with an idea or a thought or an opinion on a topic or on a subject, that they are liable to go to extreme things, such as protesting a funeral, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, but I think Mr. Talk and Cloud Nation, their topic and what they want people to be consumed about today is Maya Angelou.
And I'm all for that, but you did call in and chime in on it as well.
Okay, all right, hold on, because we get in the wrong way, and I think Antoine has a point, and Mr. Beasley, you had a point too, and that's why I said we're not going to linger on that piece right there. We're going to go ahead and keep moving on, and what I'm going to do now is play a clip from President Clinton's first inauguration where Maya Angelou read a poem called, On the Pulse of the Morning, and I think this is a very, very deep poem, and what I'm going to do, I'm going to go ahead and play it, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about that for a moment, okay? So hold on, and I see y'all on the other side. It's about 6 minutes and 10 seconds long. All right, here it is.
A rock, a river, a tree, hosts to species long since departed, marked the mastodon, the dinosaur, who left dry tokens of their sojourn here on our planet floor. Any broad alarm of their hastening doom is lost in the gloom of dust and ages. But today, the rock cries out to us, clearly, forcefully, come, you may stand upon my back and face your distant destiny, but seek no haven in my shadow. I will give you no hiding place down here. You, created only a little lower than the angels, have crouched too long in the bruising darkness, have lain too long face down in ignorance, your mouths spilling words armed for slaughter. The rock cries out to us today, you may stand upon me, but do not hide your face. Across the wall of the world, a river sings a beautiful song. It says, come, rest here by my side. Each of you, a bordered country, delicate and strangely made, proud, yet thrusting perpetually under siege. Your armed struggles for profit have left collars of waste upon my shore, currents of debris upon my breast. Yet today I call you to my riverside, if you will study war no more. Come, clad in peace, and I will sing the songs the Creator gave to me when I and the tree and the rock were one, before cynicism was a bloody sear across your brow, and when you yet knew, you still knew nothing. The river sang and sings on. There is a true yearning to respond to the singing river and the wise rock. So say the Asian, the Hispanic, the Jew, the African, the Native American, the Sioux, the Catholic, the Muslim, the French, the Greek, the Irish, the rabbi, the priest, the sheik, the gay, the straight, the preacher, the privileged, the homeless, the teacher, they all hear the speaking of the tree. They hear the first and last of every tree speak to humankind today. Come to me, here, beside the river. Plant yourself beside the river. Each of you, descendant of some past-on traveler, has been paid for. You who gave me my first name, you Pawnee, Apache, Seneca, you Cherokee Nation, who rested with me, then forced on bloody feet left me to the employment of other seekers, desperate for gain, starving for gold. You, the Turk, the Arab, the Swede, the German, the Eskimo, the Scot, you, the Ashanti, the Yoruba, the crew, bought, sold, stolen, arriving on a nightmare, praying for a dream. Here, root yourselves beside me. I am that tree planted by the river which will not be moved. I, the rock, I, the river, I, the tree, I am yours. Your passages have been paid. Lift up your faces. You have a piercing need for this bright morning dawning for you. History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived. But if faced with courage, need not be lived again. Lift up your eyes upon this day breaking for you. Give birth again to the dream. Women, children, men, take it into the palms of your hands. Mold it into the shape of your most private need. Sculpt it into the image of your most public self. Lift up your heart. Each new hour holds new chances for new beginnings. Do not be wedded forever to fear, yoked eternally to brutishness. The horizon leans forward, offering you space to place new steps of change. Here, on the pulse of this fine day, you may have the courage to look up and out and upon me, the rock, the river, the tree, your country. No less to Midas than the mendicant, no less to you now than the mastodon then. Here, on the pulse of this new day, you may have the grace to look up and out and into your sister's eyes and into your brother's face, your country, and say simply, very simply, with hope, good morning.
All right. And that was from President Clinton's inaugural address, presidential inauguration. And the name of that poem was On the Pulse of Morning, P-U-L-S-E. And wow, man, that was, I thought that was a very deep, deep poem, because she said a whole lot of stuff in there. And if you really wasn't listening, I think you may have missed a little bit in that. I want to also welcome Sister Ngoni on to the line. Welcome, sister. How you doing today? Okay, she must have muted herself. Well, we're gonna let her.
I'm doing wonderful, Eric, and yourself. I was muted. Sorry about that.
I'm doing great, and yourself. So you know,
I'm
since
great.
You good, so you know, we talked a little bit before I came on air, and you say we was gonna listen to it. So you know, because I was telling you what a powerful piece this was. So I give you first shot at it. You know, what do you think about what she said? Also, because I think it was a very, very strong statement that she made. You know, throughout that piece. Okay, you have the floor.
Well, indeed, I agree that was a powerful poem, and it spoke to my heart, and I think it also spoke to her spirit. I saw an article yesterday after being made aware of her passing, and it was a great article about her life, and it said she was a national treasure, and I say she was too big to be only a national treasure, one nation. She was a universal person, and that poem speaks to her heart and her love. And that's what I know her most of. She always had love in her heart for everyone. And the poem, I think, spoke about history. It touched on the troubles of the world. And it also, I think, expressed her desire to see a peaceful world. And so I'm glad you told me about that. I had never heard that poem before, Eric, and you were absolutely right. I will definitely have to go and listen to that several more times, because I know there's a lot more there than I'm able to comment on at this time. So that's all. I'm complete.
Okay. Well, thank you, ma'am. Anybody else would like to comment on that before I bring another person in? Beasley, Akeem, anybody?
No comment.
Yeah, no comment yet.
Wow, really? I mean, wow. I'm just amazed. All right. Well, I think the things that really stood out to me in this whole thing was, you know, when she mentioned the singing river and the wise rock, you know, so the Asian, Hispanic, Jew, and the sheep, the gay, the straight, the preacher, the privileged, the homeless, the teacher, they hear. They all hear the speaking of the tree. Now, when you think about that, what do you think about when she say the speaking of the tree? What tree is she talking about? You know, okay, come on now. I told y'all that what we're going to be doing today. They'll be talking about no old God.
I've got to say oh God, because I'm just biting the hell out of my tongue over here.
Don't bite it. Come on. Come on.
I've teased people.
Oh, now you want to tease.
On this platform, no, let me finish, for claiming that they have conversations with trees.
Oh, okay, but.
And
I
now
mean,
in this poem, she speaks of the talking tree. Maybe I've been missing out on something.
Well, okay, look, Beasley, is the tree, the speaking of the tree, is the tree symbolic of something in particular? Or, I mean, come on now. Let's be real.
I don't know. I mean, trees, they have trees that are 400, 500, 600, 700 years old. The redwood tree in particular, the largest tree of all. They're incredible when you go through that forest.
Yes, you're open.
I think she was speaking of the tree of life.
Okay. The tree of life. Okay. You know what? I can get with that. Would you like to expound a little bit different? I mean, a little further on that? Not different, but further?
No, I don't really feel that I can, but you asked the question, what kind of tree do you think she was talking about? And that's what came to my mind, that she was referring to the tree of life. I mean, there are symbols. You know, I'm sure you've probably seen the drawings in the Kabbalah about the tree of life, and there's many different parts of the tree of life that represent our journey here in this life. So that's what came to my mind. That's about as far as I can go with it.
Okay. All right.
Well, apparently they had talking trees in the Bible.
Yeah.
That's the parables. Olive tree, the fig tree.
Okay, well, that goes back to the tree of life then. I mean, with everything that was mentioned, right? Everything that she mentioned, everybody that she mentioned basically comes from basically the tree of life, correct? So if that's the case, then, you know, I guess basically what she's saying is there's really no difference besides what we make it, correct?
Well, yeah, and, you know, what makes poetry and writing thought-provoking and deep is that things have multiple meanings. They can be interpreted different ways. And all of those ways have some substance. So she could have meant a lot of things. This was a complex person. This was a woman who thought deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that not from knowing too much about her poems besides the very popular ones, just but from reading her quotes. I see people repeat these things not knowing that they come from her.
Correct. I agree with that. You know, that's why we're actually trying to, put some insight or enlighten people as to how great this woman was. You talking kind of sideways right now, Beasley, but it's okay. We're going to get there. Let me bring P. Yankee in. He's been waiting patiently, and we're going to get this thing going.
Ding, 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 ding.
Ain't no ding, ding,
ding. What's
going
on, Eric?
What's happening, Beasley? How you doing? I mean, what's going on, Pianki? How you doing,
man? Man, you might as well. Everything's fine.
Good, good, good. What's up, man?
We have some tragic deaths from people who's associated with this city. Miss Angelo and also Bertha Gilkey and you don't know much about her. But, you know, it's one of the drawbacks of a living. Sooner or later, you have to die. And, you know, I always have said that the only thing wrong with death is it just lasts too long.
Yankee, I'm going to ask you straight up, what do you have to say about Maya Angelou? I don't want to hear nothing about death lasts too long. We, you know, for some of y'all, it is going to last a long time. But what do you have to say about Maya Angelou?
Well, she was very masterful with her articulation of words. And people that have those capabilities usually can relate to the environment, not only that they live in, but the environment that that they see going on around them from a distance and also close up. So, you know, she, the death of her absence is going to be sad. And I just wonder who's going to step forward and take her place. It probably can't be taken, but she has contributed quite a bit. You know, her books was, some of her books was banned in the public schools, like Why the Caged Bird Sing. And that was a travesty also. There's no reason in the world why that book should have been banned. I don't believe in banning books, no matter what the content of them. They should be there for people to have opportunity to view, read, and make decisions on their own.
So why do you think they would ban such a book or poem such as Why the Caged Bird Sings? What was the reasoning behind banning it? Because, I mean, did they really understand what she meant when she wrote the book or the play or the poem? Or was it just a misinterpretation of what they thought it may have meant?
And I take that back. I do believe that children should not be exposed to certain things, especially if it goes against the will of their parent. And as far as the question that you asked, I think that the idea that the bird was caged and to relate that to an ethnic group at that point in time in history, sort of relating to them still being in a form of imprisonment.
But at the time, was that really about the people being enslaved, or was that about her personal misery that she had to go through before she realized her coming? And
what she wrote could have applied to many different situations, Eric, and that's why that's the beauty of it. When a person write something in the capacity that she was writing, an individual coming from many different perspectives in their life's journeys can find a need for it. They all don't have to originate from the same place, but something about what she wrote applied to the heart and soul of different individuals, and they was able to grasp onto it.
Okay. Well, since you brought that up, let's go ahead and listen to Why the Caged Bird Sings. And this is what's that lady name? I forgot her name. God dang it. Angela Bassett doing Why the Caged Bird Sings. All right. So I see y'all on the other side, and we can get a little bit deeper into that poem also.
Adding to the evening's good music.
Thank you.
Maya Angelou.
Oh.
A free bird leaps on the back of the wind and floats downstream till the current ends and dips his wing in the orange sun's rays and dares to claim the sky. But a bird lets down his narrow cage, can seldom see through his bars of rage. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied. So he opens his throat to sing. The cage bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still. And his tune is heard on the distant hill. The cage bird sings of freedom. The free bird thinks of another breeze, and the trade wind soft through the sighing trees, and the fat worms waiting on a dawn bright lawn, and he names the sky his own. But a caged bird stands on the grave of dreams. His shadow shouts on, and a nightmare scream. His wings are clipped and his feet are tied, so he opens his throat to sing. The cage bird sings with a fearful trill of things unknown but longed for still. His tune is heard on a distant hill, for the caged bird sings of freedom.
Ooh, I think that last word was kind of heavy there. She said freedom. And I think everybody, when they hear that word freedom, they automatically think of bondage or slavery or whatever. But, man, I tell you, could it be more as into freedom from within thyself? You know, could you constantly consider yourself a prisoner within in your own mind? You know, come on, y'all got so much information. Y'all talk about everything else. You know, hey, we having a conversation. Let's talk. Come on, you know.
Well, Eric, you asked the question: could you possibly be, when you think of the term freedom, could a person be, you say, unfree in themselves? Is that what you said?
Yes. In other words, in bondage to yourself, you know, in her case, you know, she made herself a mute, you know, because of what happened to her. So could that be being a prisoner of your own mind until you're ready to say, okay, I'm free of this. I'm no longer going to let this hold me prisoner hold me prisoner, period. You know, to where I'm ready to let this go. I am now free. You know, that's, and the bird is gone. You know?
She didn't make herself mute because of what happened to her. She felt that her words had caused somebody to have something happen to them. And that's when she told her brother, when the brother asked her, "Who done this to you?"
Mm-hmm.
And then the name that she gave the individual ended up being found dead.
Hmm. Oh, really? And go further on, Mr. Pianki.
Well, I mean, there's nothing further to go than that. Only person she talked to was the brother. She didn't talk to anybody else.
But I mean, how long did she? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. I hear somebody else coming in.
That was Hakeem speaking, and I was just gonna say that I found this particular poem to be. Be very interesting. The timing in which it came out in the book, because from the resource that I was reading on it, it said that it was published in 1970, and it was part of the of a collective pieces of work that came about while she was in connection with her a good friend of hers at the time, James Baldwin, the novelist. But also, what was also interesting to me is that before that, not long from, you know, not much longer before that, you know, in 1968, Martin Luther King was assassinated on her birthday, and before that, Brother Malcolm was also assassinated. So I found this an interesting time to write and to work on a piece like this 2 years following such moments of, you know, I don't want to say despair, but at such an interesting time in America and in her life in particular, when she got a chance to witness and be surrounded by such amazing movements, such amazing people, but to also see the hardship and the things that the destructive things that were happening, you know, around her at the time, because it seemed like each person that she was connected to, they seem to be dying off. I mean, she was just with Malcolm, and then he's assassinated. Then she connects with Martin, then he's assassinated, you know? And then following that comes this piece and this, and also the book that was published, and a lot of her, part of her personal life, professionally at least, seems to really be taken off in the publishing realm, and it also leads to the film realm once you go further up to like 1972, when she both written a screenplay and the score, the music to Georgia, which that's, I don't know, I don't care who you are, that's incredible to pull off that type of work to blaze a trail like that as a woman in 1972 and black woman. Fascinating.
Those are real good points he just brought up. Really, really good points. I was kind of formulating a thought like that in my mind. I'm glad he stopped talking so he wouldn't steal my thunder and say what I was about to say. Because he was heading along the right path, because she did work both with Malcolm X, who she met in Ghana, from what I read, in 1954. After he was assassinated, Martin Luther King sought her out. So her brilliance was evidenced for quite some time. Why the Caged Bird Sing was an autobiography. So she probably felt a sense of her own mortality, having seen both of these guys get murdered before they were 40. And it probably, it made her, I say that was probably the motivation for her to write her autobiography. It was also probably the motivation for her to attempt and try things that she never attempted before, that she thought were out of her reach or out of her realm. She figured she may as well go for it. And I think that explains her having success in the play that the gentleman just mentioned. Yeah, she probably was feeling her own mortality and the possibility that she can die and how fleeting life is, and took advantage of it and wrote this book. She has a pretty traumatic childhood. She was raped at 8 years old. She was sent away to go live with her grandparents when she was 3. And from what I just read, what the book's about is how people can triumph, particularly black girls, how they can triumph from, you know, difficult circumstances, and reach out and fulfill your dreams. How to overcome racism and trauma. It also says that the book, there's a lot of metaphors that are used when she speaks about rape, and it's a metaphor for the suffering of her people. And when she speaks about the bird struggling to escape its cage, teaches about how people learn to overcome oppression, racial oppression. And the reason why the book was banned is because apparently it has some graphic descriptions of childhood rape, racism, and sexuality. So I guess it made some people uncomfortable and they didn't want it in their school. But Foundation brought up really good points.
All right. Well, thank you, and I'm glad. I'm glad we got a little deep into it. Let me bring Renee in, because she's been waiting patiently, and I know she's ready. All right, Renee, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Hey, how's everybody?
Okay, we're doing wonderful.
I'm happy. I'm gay.
Oh Lord!
I know.
Anyway,
I'm sure you are.
Right. Okay, can we get on? Can we move on,
yeah,
please? All right.
Yeah, I just said hey, but you know, it's sad about her passing, but you know, I have to say that she led a remarkable life, though. And, you know, sometimes when people pass, celebrities or even, you know, just your average everyday person, people always say, oh, they're going to live on through this, that, or the other. And, they, you know, it's kind of like, okay, well, it's a nice thing to say. But for her, I think that's really true. Like, her words, her poetry, everything is going to live on forever. I mean, that's, you know, people are going to still be, you know, studying this classic material, how we do now. So I think she had a, you know, a good life in the sense that, you know, she had bad things happen to her, but she channeled that through her poetry, and that impacted a lot of people. But I also wanted to talk about molestation, because when her book, I remember reading that when I was young, and, you know, and I remember watching the movie as well. But the thing is, when she spoke about what happened and when she then became or muted herself, it's like that time when the family would react and do something. It's kind of like that time is gone. And even though she, you know, felt bad, she felt responsible. You know, at the same time, I feel like in the black family, that dynamic is not really there anymore. And we kind of let these things kind of just go by. So I think that was interesting, thinking about it from the perspective of the black family during her youth and the black family today, and how much that's changed and all that kind of stuff. She, you know, like her poem about Will I Rise, I mean, so many black women have done that poem over and over and over. But things like that make black women feel powerful, because we don't have a lot of, you know, people speaking about black little girls and black young women and how we feel and, you know, what we think about. But the fact that she wrote that poem, that specific poem, oh, man, it's amazing. And I can't think of not one black woman who does not know that poem and does not love that poem. But, yeah, she was amazing. And, you know, it's not sad as much as it is. You know, she's gone on, you know. So that's how I look at it. But she was.
Boy, I tell you, this is the quiet. I haven't seen my board in a long time.
Yeah, I was like, hello?
I know, but, right? Really, what's going on? Go ahead.
But I was going to say, too, and this is just a different perspective on it, because I saw on Anderson Cooper last night, and he was talking about, you know, her, and they showed clips of his interviews with her, and his most recent one from 6 months ago, and different ones. And hearing her talk, he began to ask her about, you know, what she felt about black people, and do we think the race issue is as prevalent today, and all that kind of thing. And I felt like her answers were very PC. And knowing that this woman had went through the things that she went through as a black woman, and then as you guys were saying, being affiliated with King and with Malcolm X and all that that meant. I mean, I know she has that radical spirit in her, but I felt like in her later years that she was kind of put out there as that I'm trying to figure out how to say it. She was kind of put out there as that black grandmother figure and just loving and kind of passive and kind of like a peaceful movement. And sometimes, and, you know, this is no insult to her because absolutely not. But I'm just saying that those type of figures, like what she became later, is comfortable for society. It's comfortable hearing her poetry, like the poems she did at Clinton's, you know, inauguration. It things like that are comfortable for society. So I feel like when I was hearing her talk about it and she was saying, well, you know, I'm just, she said she was sad because thinking of all the things her country could be. And she was saying, you know, we'll get there and things like that. And that's great and that's hopeful. But it was like she was censoring herself still just to kind of have to be in that position. So I just thought that was interesting with her background. And then to, you know, to kind of now, well, she's passed now, but to now it's kind of like she subdues people, if you can understand what I mean.
It's called maturity and gaining perspective.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I mean, she, and how she answered the questions, she alluded to many things. But when he was re-asking her things and then how she ended up putting it, it sounded more like it was PC. To me.
Well, what exactly did she say?
He was saying, you know, he was basically asking her, does she think discrimination and all that still exists? You know, and she told him, she said, yeah, you know, of course. She said, I know that you know it does, and anyone watching this does. And she was kind of trying to go into that, but then he tried to re-steer her in a different direction. And so then her answers seemed to be a little bit more, to me, this is how it came out to me, as being PC. And I'm just saying, for a woman like that to have been through all this hell, I don't think it's necessarily maturity. Maturity doesn't mean that you don't speak on real issues. I think that for her age at that point, she wasn't going to be into that radical kind of thing, even though she knows that. She knows what that is.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that Bobby Seale has the same views and opinions as he did in 1968? Do you think Angela Davis has the same views and opinion that she had in 1968? Do you think Muhammad Ali has the same views and opinions that he had in 1968? It's absolutely it's absolutely maturity, and it's absolutely perspective, because with age and years, you gain a different perspective because of your maturity, and you realize. And I'm saying this because I've watched it happen in myself. And I know that 40 and 50 years of life experience, say from someone's 25 until they're 75. You look at things differently. It just happens.
You do, but I have to disagree with the way that happens and why that happens. Like Bobby Seale, I'm not really sure. I watched some more recent interviews with him and some of the things he was saying, but he was reflecting on the time of the Black Panthers. But Angela Davis, you know, yes, she changed, but in my opinion now, she sold out, okay? But she was dealing with George Jackson, all this stuff at that time.
Did you really just call Angela Davis a sellout?
Yes, I did. Let me finish. During that time, okay, she was revolutionary. She was getting ready to go to prison, all the things that were going on at that time, okay? And she was standing up. However, you see her now, and not to say that she hasn't said some great things, not to say that she hasn't, you know, had an impact, okay? But in watching a lot of her recent stuff and speeches and different things, she's taking that in a different direction. Now, she always had that feminist element, but now she's going into some whole other realm with this feminism thing, and it's just something completely different. And my honest opinion is that when she was going through all of that stuff, see, during that time, the government was trying to get involved, and they were buying people out. They were putting people in as informants. They were doing all kind of things under the table. And I'm not going to say this is fact or truth, but this is my belief, okay, that at a certain point in time, a certain stage, she sold out more. She acquired it, that certain thing in her, and so then that began to be about just feminism. And now she's with this whole, the feminist movement and women this, women that, and talking about women can do anything that a man can do and gender this, that, and the other. And that's going in a different direction from what her standpoint originally was.
As time progresses and one has a different focus and a different and chooses to focus or speak out and champion a different cause, that means you sold out? She's the furthest thing from a sellout. That woman stood strong. That woman stood strong. Do you know what happened when the FBI came to question Angela Davis? And I don't know how much you know about what happened, but what she was accused of doing was giving guns to Jonathan Jackson,
yes,
who was George Jackson's 17-year-old
right,
younger brother, and Jonathan Jackson, who was a real true revolutionary. When I
mm-hmm.
talk about busting your gun, being a revolutionary, that's what I'm talking about. And he stormed the Marin County Courthouse in San Rafael
mm-hmm.
and shot people and took the duds hostage, and they killed them before they got away. But Angela Davis was accused. One of those guns apparently was registered in her name.
Right.
She had to go as a fugitive. Do you know what mm-hmm. she told the FBI when they arrested her?
What?
Nothing.
Hmm.
Let me finish. Under whatever pressure they put her under, she didn't say one word. You have the right to remain silent. She didn't say one word, and she took all of the heat that the press had to give. She was called a murderer, and she stood tall, went to trial, and won. Now, I don't know how you would consider anybody like that a sellout, but maybe you're not using the terms the way that I see the terms. But that woman stood stronger than most men. Look at First 48, and look at Angela Davis.
What?
I'm not talking about her then. That's what I said when I was talking.
I said
her now. And the thing about it is when you said with age comes this and that. With age does not always guarantee wisdom. With age does not always guarantee improvement. It really, really does not. In fact, some people regress. And we don't always know. See, we don't know everything that goes on behind the scenes. But it was just interesting to me how that particular change kind of happened. And I don't think it's always necessarily the person came to this epiphany and they went in a different direction of what they feel. Sometimes as people get older, and I love talking to elders, and my grandmothers and grandfathers are not here anymore, but just from talking to them about what they went through being born in the 30s and in the late 20s and all that happened, okay, many times from what they told me is that your fight in you is just stronger when you're younger. And as you get older, it's not that you're maturing into a dip into this perspective where things are just, oh, so this and that. It's just that sometimes they disconnect from that part of them. And that this is for the young people to be revolutionary.
That's absolutely is maturity. Oh. You know what it says in The Art of War?
What?
Conflict leads to destruction, so conflict must be avoided at all costs.
All right, hold on.
That's what it says. So the person that chooses not to do battle likely is going to have a chance of prevailing. The best battle is the battle that's never fought. And take it from a person that likes to fight and grew up fighting.
Okay. Hold on for a minute. Let me bring Sister Ottawa in and get her point of view on some of this. This sounds like fun. All right. Sister Ottawa, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Well, I wanted to go back to the poem, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
Okay.
I think that there's a great deal that's being said there, but we're not looking into it. Being caged is almost like being, or is it synonymous to being domesticated? When you have a dog that you feed every day, that you cage, that doesn't roam, that doesn't fend for himself, he loses the skills of being able to find the herbs that he needs, that how to find shelter, just things, basic survival skills. That domesticated animal loses that. And to me, when I listen to the poem, I can see how people who live in poverty, they are confined. Prison, of course, is greater confinement. But when you're confined and you cannot move and you cannot be who you are and aspire to be great by conquering this land, moving like you want to, going where you want to go, that is like being caged. And I think that what she is saying, that even when the bird sings, a caged bird sings, his song, when he is singing, there is a fearful trill that comes from his voice, and it's heard in distance, at a distant hill, which means that there are things that come from this caged animal that not it'll awaken other caged animals. She talks about when a bird is freed, how it jumps onto the wind and it claims the sky. Okay, that's a great thing. That's truly aspiration.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to look at where we are. In many ways, our wings are clipped. There's just so much you can do. Your dollar is just going to take you 6 blocks up the way. You know, that's about the extent of your perspective of the world is your neighborhood, because you haven't gone outside of it. You haven't had the wherewithal to go outside of it. So you stay within the confines of your what you're used to, you know.
No.
So just like in the miseducation of Negro, when they talk about the slave being told not to use the front door, so he goes around to the back door. And even when the front door's open and he's been told to come in, he'll still go around to the back door. He would never take the experience of going through the front door. So in a sense, I look at that poem a little more into not just the bird being in a cage, but looking at analogies that, you know, well, this can explain a lot of our own behavior every day, you know, that we are clipped. Our wings have been clipped. And until you step out and sing and let it be known what you're going through, other people will say, well, you know, I'm going through that too. I hear you. You know, I'm ready to move. Let's do it. I want to speak also on the young sister who was talking about age. Yes, our soldiers are the youth. But you see today that most of our youth have been put in prisons. They've been confined. Their wings have been clipped. So we're sitting, you're sitting here and you're listening to older people talk. It doesn't mean that they're any less political, less revolutionary. In fact, you might find that a saged person can give you some details that your peers cannot give you, that have had history, that have experienced some things in life, in their life, that you can't read about in a book, no kind of way. So there's a lot to learn from the elders. And even if you want to be revolutionary, there's some things they can tell you that you don't have any way for you to know it, you know, today, unless someone older can impart that knowledge to you. So that's what I wanted to share. And in terms of her being a sellout, I would, you know, say that no, that's not the case, because the pen is a very powerful tool, and it reaches people who might not come out of their home. They'll read a book, and their perspective on the world will change. And so I think she was a powerful sister. She spoke, indeed, she spoke to women issues, the things that the black woman has gone through. You talked about the tree. There was another poem that you played, and it was about the tree that, you know, you can, and the gentleman said that, well, there we go, people talking about talking trees and whatnot. But if you think about
It was me that said that, Beasley. I'm not
okay,
gentleman.
Mr. Beasley.
If you think about
Mr. Carver, who invented all of these different inventions from the peanut and the sweet potato, well, he, in his writings, he talks about the plant telling him what to do with it. So the living, there is a way to communicate with flowers and birds and, you know, squirrels and deer and bears and lions and every living thing. You can communicate. So because there is a community, there's an intelligence. Just think spring. Everything is blooming. It's not blooming in the winter. It blooms in the spring. So there's an intelligence inherent in life, in nature. So I think if we pay attention to nature, we can resolve a lot of our issues. And that's what I wanted to say.
Wow. All right. But that was very insightful, Sister Ottawa. Wow. You had me scribbling down a whole lot of stuff. Anybody want to add to what she had to say or respond?
I'm just going to go ahead and not respond.
Okay.
I want to.
Uh-huh.
I can't help it. I'll just choose my words carefully. Never, ever are you ever going to see me talk to a sweet potato or a peanut. I'm just not going to do it.
But Beasley,
no circumstances whatsoever.
Beasley,
I think that is beyond the realm of reality.
Isn't that really being a little crass, as they say, or a little silly?
Crass? No, dude. Crass.
It's being a little silly. I'm trying to say crass, but is that being a little silly?
I can't. I'm just leaving what I said. I don't believe that you can talk to vegetables or trees. Maybe you can make little noises at squirrels, but they don't really talk back. I'm not Dr. Doolittle, you know. I just don't believe in that too much. And if other people that do, then they're entitled to do it.
But Beast, hello?
Come on, Mr. Talk. Don't do this to me. Don't put me on the spot for saying that I don't believe that you can talk to sweet potatoes and peanuts.
But,
please don't single me out. So
you're missing it.
Okay.
I,
right.
All right, I see. You want to play your little game today? Okay.
I'm not playing the game, Mr. Clark. If you could sit and listen to someone tell you about how they talk to squirrels and peanuts and sweet potatoes, you know.
But aren't you being a little literal here? I mean, come on now. Come on,
Mr. Clark.
Yes,
I'm just taking it from the way that I'm just taking
just
it from the way that
to,
I hear it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Am I open?
Yes, you are.
Oh, what Sister Ottawa was speaking about brought to mind a good book. A scientist did a study on the secret life of plants. So maybe Ms. Beasley would like to look that book up. It's very insightful.
Okay.
How you doing?
Sister, how you doing?
I'm good, and you?
So
I'm good.
All right, so we're going to move from As the Caged Bird Sings to And Still I Rise, you know, since Beasley don't want to talk to no trees or whatever. I guess he's not listening to the birds sing either. But
He doesn't feed them.
Or he's not joining the chorus. Yeah, he's not joining in the chorus also. But what was meant by "And Still I Rise"? You know, I haven't played the clip yet, but I want to see, you know, what y'all think about that. You know,
can I say something real quick too, and I'm gonna answer that. But in the chat room, I put up a couple of links to some things on Angela Davis, and you know, that people might want to look at to kind of get where I'm coming from. And also, I wanted to say too to the sister who was speaking. Oh no, I am completely not against elders at all. You know, that's where I don't really look to my peers for information. I look to the elders more so because, like you said, they have experience, they've been through it, and particularly, like I said, the ones in my family, because my grandfather was a black historian, and he had degrees in that, and he would go in and teach at schools on black history. So I learned a whole lot from him. And it's things that are invaluable. I mean, that, you know, you couldn't find anywhere else. So, no, that elders are very, very special in our community. And, yeah, so I wasn't meaning that at all. I was just saying that not with, you know, there can be an old fool, too. That's all I was saying, you know. And just because someone gets older doesn't always mean they get wiser. That's not necessarily always true. But about Still I Rise, I mean, for me, it was just basically, to me, speaking on women, but speaking on black women, that we've been through hell and back. We've had to go through so much. I mean, look at her life in itself. Sexual abuse, something like 60% of black women are sexually abused in their life, at some point in their life. You know, we get a lot of blame for a lot of things. You know, we have to kind of bear a lot of the responsibility for our children. You know, we have to put our children first. We have a lot of things that fall on the shoulders of black women. And so, you know, Still I Rise was just basically a testament to that, to say, you know what, we deal with all of these things, but at the end of the day, gonna get up. So, anyway.
I agree with that, Mr. What Renee just shared, Mr. Talk. While she was speaking, I reviewed that poem, and I think what that poem speaks to is, like Renee just said, the essence of our spirit to overcome and to keep moving forward.
Y'all, it is quiet today.
Okay. Look, I was talking to have myself muted. My bad.
Yeah, I'm like, hello.
Okay. All right. But, you know, okay, look, I understand, you know, I guess in this instance, more women would I guess, associate themselves with that. being that it was written by a woman. But can we look at it at in a bigger picture as a group type of thing, or is that just regulated to just a woman's point of view?
But while you had yourself muted and you were talking, I did just that. I said, I think that point I rise speaks to the human essence, the human spirit, to overcome and keep moving forward. But you were muted and you were talking about it. So.
Yeah, I got muted.
That speaks to the human spirit.
Mm-hmm. The human spirit. Okay.
I mean, yes, but no. Like, can we? I mean, you know, anyone can get inspiration from that. But I'm saying, can we not have something that is for black women, you know, that is meant for us, that is tailor fit to us? And if other people can, like I said, also find something in that, which is a powerful message as is, but can we not, you know what I mean, have something that's, hey, black women, you know, you going through this, that, and the other. Okay, but still we rise.
Yeah, we can, I mean, Renee. However, we're talking about Dr. Maya Angelou, and that's not what her life represented. She was one who was bigger than that. She rose beyond that, and her love embraced all life, all living things.
I'm not saying it didn't. I'm not saying it didn't.
Well, I'm not saying you did. I'm agreeing with what you're saying. You ask a question. Can't we have something, you said, for black women?
Mm-hmm.
And all I'm saying, making a tribute to Dr. Maya Angelou, that did not express her life. Her vision wasn't limited to one people. Her spirit went beyond that. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying you're wrong.
You know,
you can see the way you want to see it.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you know, if you wanna, I think just narrow it down to just something where women what's all that noise? Women take away from. I think that's what the phenomenal woman is all about. You know, I think that's directed more toward the black woman than and Still I Rise. I think, you know, you could say that's more generalized, and Phenomenal Woman is more geared at the black woman to let her know that she is phenomenal, you know, and, you know, there's really nothing that she can't do once she puts herself to it, you know, herself into it. Of course, that's just my point of view on that.
I agree. I'm just saying in the poem, she says things about her sassiness. She says things about, you know, how she dances like she's got diamonds at the meeting of her thighs, and you know, all that, those kind of things to me gives me the mental picture of a woman, of a black woman. But, like, you know, anyone can, and no, she was not limited at all, but that's just what I meant.
Okay, all right. Interesting. Anybody else before I play this other one here, this other clip that's called I Am Human. And I thought this was a very interesting poem also, because it's like, you know, we've been trying to narrow it to this and that, but I think this I Am Human, it says a lot for where she was, you know, as far as mentally anyway, you know. And it, you know what, it kind of reminded me of Sister Ngoni. I shouldn't say that, but when she said, I am a human being, we're all human, and this kind of, you know, reminded me of her. So let me play this. It's about 3 minutes long. All right, see y'all on the other side.
I was going to add something.
Well, go ahead before I play it.
Sister Ngonye hit it on the head when she talked about the universality of Maya Angelou. She gave a speech, I think when she was 81, to a lesbian and gay transgender group, and paraphrase what she said. You know, she said, I'm black, I'm white, I'm gay, I'm straight, I'm Jew, I'm Gentile, I'm a Native American, that she's human.
Yeah.
She embraced all of humanity. I just read here, too, she married a Greek sailor when she was, you know, in 1952. She's done it all. She won a lot of awards, too, for her work. She won the Emmy Awards and Tony Awards, and she's a pretty remarkable person.
Yep, that's true. All right, hold on. Let me get I Am Human on.
If I think of my life as a class and what I've really learned, I've learned a few things. First, I'm aware that I'm a child of God. It's such an amazing understanding to think that the it which made fleas and mountains and rivers and stars made me. What I pray for is humility, to know that there's something greater than I. Then I have to know that the brute, the bigot, and the batterer are all children of God, whether they know it or not. And I'm supposed to treat them accordingly. And it's hard, and I blow it all the time.
Mongrel class of people.
I'd like everybody to think of a statement by Terence. The statement is, I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me. If you can internalize the least portion of that, you will never be able to say of an act, a criminal act, or I couldn't do that. No matter how heinous the crime, if a human being did it, you have to say, I have in me all the components that are in her or in him. I intend to use my energies constructively as opposed to destructively. If you can do that about the negative, just think what you can do about the positive. If a human being dreams a great dream, dares to love somebody, if a human being dares to be Martin King or Mahatma Gandhi or Mother Teresa or Malcolm X, if a human being dares to be bigger than the condition into which she or he was born, it means so can you. And so you can try to stretch yourself. So you can internalize, ah, homo sum, humani nihila me alienum puto. I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me. That's one thing I'm learning.
Wow, how did y'all like that one? I thought that was pretty good myself. Okay.
Yes, that was wonderful. And, you know, I think a good way to sum up Dr. Maya Angelou is to see her as a visionary who saw the world as it could be.
I would agree with that. You know, and it kind of, I guess it kind of does go back to what Renee says. As she, you know, I think as she aged, or for a better word, maybe she wasn't as so-called radical out front, but she evolved, you know, to realize that, you know, often. Now, this just is my opinion, y'all, okay? That, you know, often, you know, we just put limitations on ourselves to where, you know, we just self-destructive, put it that way. And until we really take the time to unleash or get ourselves, be that bird that's no longer singing in that prison and raise up and join other birds flying free and singing together, you know, we always will be stuck in this one little spot, doing the same thing over and over repetitiously without, you know, any sense of direction. Of course, that's just my opinion. Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to say what I got from that was don't let your circumstances define who you are. You know, because sometimes we can be in a situation and become consumed or burdened with that situation, and we lose all perspective, we lose the things that we hold dear to ourselves, our principles and values, because of
the circumstances we might find ourselves in.
I agree with that. I really don't think
she ever lost sense of who she was as a black woman. And it's in everything she writes. It's there. You know, she is very clear about who she is and what her contribution to the world is.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, go ahead. I'm sorry, Mr. Stone.
No, you good. Go ahead.
She was comfortable enough as a black woman to be friends with James Baldwin, who was gay, and she was also comfortable enough as a black woman to marry a white Greek man in 1952. So she was very comfortable with herself. She wasn't concerned about what people think.
Okay, go ahead, Akeem. That's interesting, Beasley.
I was just going to say that I'm fascinated by the amount of hats that Maya Angelou wore. And it's amazing, you know, she is a true griot. She's they talk about her being, a teacher and so much more. And she's definitely a true Renaissance woman. She could have easily accepted, you know, the harsh reality of her circumstances and embraced being broken. But instead, she emerged out of the darkest pits, you know, stronger and more driven. And she decided to live out loud, basically, and live over, live out loud instead of merely existing in fear. You know, she was obviously courageous, obviously bold, obviously fearless, obviously unshakable. But she's also a sculptor and a molder of life. You know, she desired and refused to accept anything less than the best quality of life. And to me, that's definitely an admirable trait. I mean, one of her quotes is, I believe, "You may not control all the events that happen to you, but you can decide not to be reduced by them." And I think she definitely exemplified that.
Wow. All right. That was, man, I tell you, that was good, Akeem. Can't argue with that one. That was outstanding. You and Beasley been working together, I see. Oh, man. You know, and I still haven't played And I Still Rise, but we discussed it already, and I probably won't even play it now. But,
you know what?
I mean, oh,
there's
yes.
so much more to her than her poetry. I'm just reading about her.
Okay.
She painted. She was a screenwriter. She was an actress.
Yeah. Yeah, and
she did everything.
Yeah, that's what I say. She was a multifaceted woman. You know, she won Grammys, and you see what's the movie I remember her being in? Poetic Justice with Janet Jackson, Tupac, Cicely Tyson. You know, she was spilling out wisdom then. You know, I mean, she was just more. But the bad part about it is, you know, and I think H2O said it earlier in the show. In the chat room, you know, it's a shame that it takes for her to pass away for her to really get the recognition that she deserved.
Oh, yeah.
She was appreciated here on Earth, and you've looked at all these awards. 20-something years ago, she spoke at the inauguration for Clinton. She's been on the world stage for quite some time, and she was recognized. But I wasn't that compelled to read what I've learned today that I know about her now.
See, and that was my next question. Was she recognized by the people that needed to recognize her and to know what she was about?
Who are the people that need to recognize her? This woman transcended everything, as far as people and groups of people. Any human being can read her story and see that you can overcome and live a pretty substantial life. Her message transcends any group of people.
Mr. Talk? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Beasley.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to ask Mr. Talk if he by any chance heard her interview with Dave Chappelle. That's another incredible interview, too. Powerful.
No, I didn't hear it with Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, it was really powerful.
Mm. Okay. Okay. Well, I say, is there anything else we need to speak of on Sister Maya Angelou? I mean, if you notice in the, at the end of that clip right there, she actually started speaking. I don't know what language that was, but she started speaking a different language. You know, I don't know whether that was, maybe somebody can help me, you know, African or what it was, but it was different.
It was African.
It was African? Okay.
Well, they said she spoke the Fanti dialect, which Ghanaians speak. And she lived there in Accra for, I guess, quite a long, I think a couple of different periods in her life.
Yeah, that was. I think that was. It was at 57, or was that the 60s? Because she also moved to Cairo, Egypt, and I believe she worked for the Arab Observer and the African Review. That's the one you're talking about, where she wrote for the Ghanaian Times. So yeah,
right.
She was definitely well. Well traveled, and that's why what made me think of her as a Renaissance woman, because I've read a lot of her poetry, and I knew a lot about her poetry, but I never went as deep into studying.
Life.
I was always fond of her life, exactly. I was always fond of her writings. I think her writings have impacted many of us in many ways, whether it was directly or indirectly, but. Yeah, growing up, it's hard, you know, to read just the fact that she mastered, not just learned, but mastered French, Spanish, Italian, Arabic, in the West African language of Fanti. That in itself is what some would consider Rhodes Scholar level. I mean, if you're excited about the whole Rhodes Scholar concept, because I know it has some negative backdrop to it too as well, but it just fascinating to see the amount of things she did, that she the layers of this person's life, and what she did in the age, in different ages, where the things that she did, she was basically redefining what a black person or what a woman or could do, whether it was by class, whether it was based on your level of education, all these things. She just kept redefining possibilities over and over and over again. That's what I keep seeing when I look at every thread of her life. It's just, it plays out. And then, like I said, the context of her life, you have to take it in doses of layers. It's so rich. You know what I mean? Some people contribute to our lives in such a deep way, and I know the sisters were talking about nature earlier in the context of how nature can just teach you so many things in such a deep, rich context. It's you have to take it in a layer, because it's so much of it. It's so rich that you can't just take it in one or two doses. You have to it's a continuum of learning and experience. And I think with Maya Angelou, you have to continue to experience her. She has that linger, like a beautiful woman with a grand fragrance, one of the most pleasant fragrance coming past you. When you're trying to take in both her beauty and her scent, you got to take it. You got to take it in layers, because it's so much. You know what I mean? I hope I explained that well enough.
Oh, you explained that very well. I mean, you couldn't put it any plainer, I don't think.
You know, someone this accomplished and worthy of being celebrated as her would have to have a dark side. I'm reading comments here on people that have interacted with her over the past 10 years, and they said she could be a bit surly and that she was a mean drunk. But
well,
there's lots of people that are mean drunks.
I mean, Beasley, she said that I am human. And that's what she said. She was still working
on it. I'm not knocking her for it. It's just, I know people aren't that simple. People are complex. Mm-hmm. But, speaking to what Cloud, that's his name? That's what we call him? What do we call him? Your co-host?
Oh, yeah.
Your co-host?
Akeem.
Cloud?
Yeah. Cloud.
Go ahead. No, you're right. He's inside of my head. Some of the things that he's saying, I'm thinking at the same time.
You know, Mr. Chalk, what I think is incredible about Dr. Maya Angelou is that she attributes her being set free to be all that she was able to be to her mother.
Hmm. Yeah. You know, that's
strange because she was shipped off to live with her grandparents when she was real young in Arkansas, and I don't know how she ended up from Arkansas all the way out to San Francisco, but apparently she was accepted and got a scholarship to some ballet school or something. She's just an incredibly talented person
I don't know how she got there either, but you know what? In one of her speeches, a short three.
Okay, what happened? I'm sorry.
She was talking about her mother's passing, and she said her mother liberated her, and at her mother's passing, she felt that some spirits have to have permission to leave, and she felt that she was able to do for her mother what her mother had done for her. As a matter of fact, in that short three-minute speech, she even said her mother was a lousy mother of small children, but a great mother of adolescence, and that it was her mother that instilled in her the idea that maybe she just might be someone great.
Hmm.
Those were her words.
In other words, just never give up, right? Just never give up. Am I right? Is that the bottom line, correct? Just never give up?
No, I didn't take it that way. I took it that she was saying her mother implanted in her the idea that she pondered on, that perhaps she had something within her that may be meaningful to someone beyond herself.
That's what mothers are supposed to do. But yeah.
Yes, but so many.
That's what good mothers do. That's what Barack Obama said his mother did. She encouraged him, told him he could do anything and be anything he wanted to be. That's what good mothers do.
Mm-mm.
That's what.
Okay. Alrighty then.
No,
all
it's
right.
The truth.
I know it's the truth.
That becomes your foundation, particularly as a young dude, because that's
right.
Who believes in you. That's who believes in you, because it's not easy out there. Even as this whole process is full of obstacles from the day that you're able to take your first step. It's full of obstacles and difficulties and circumstances and situations. And there's times, no matter how good your life is, that you feel like you're boxing a damn corner.
Mm. Oh, you got a point there, too.
How do you get out of it? What makes you keep swinging? You have to draw deep with inside of you, and where, you know, I don't know what other people do, but I'm able to draw on the things that I was taught by my mother and grandmother.
That's right. You got to go back to that tree of life, where your energy comes from. Talk to that tree, Beasley. You got to talk to that tree eventually. You just said it.
I talk to the tree before I talk to a yam or a sweet potato, but I like them, though.
Oh, Lord, see, there you go. All right. All right, we ain't going to hold y'all long today because I got some things I need to do. And, of course, we got Ebony coming up this afternoon right behind me. So, you know, I'd like for y'all to get there on time, too. But I'm not going to get out here before let y'all get y'all last words in because I know we have a lot, you know, I want y'all to get some good words in here. Somebody got a lot of stuff going on, making some noise. All right, so we're going to start. Oh, Sister Otto, we're gone? Okay, well, we're going to start with Renee. Renee, you up, darling. Go for it. Renee, are you there?
Yeah. I'm
okay.
Here.
All right.
I was muted doing something. But anyway, I don't know, closing words, that she was definitely a phenomenal woman in the sense of, the, you know, just like her poem. I think, you know, everybody has a dark side to them. And I have heard that before about her, that she, you know, she can be something else. But that takes nothing away from what she gave. Like I said, people, it's cliche to say, oh, good words will live on forever. But in this case, that's a very true statement. And, you know, I just encourage anyone to maybe get some of this poetry, especially for young black girls. I mean, it's good for anyone, but for young women, very young women, and not only that, but the book, I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings, those are good foundations for preteen young black girls and teenage young black girls to begin, you know, reading some of those things and letting it get in their subconscious. And that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, ma'am, for joining us today. And I'll see you tomorrow. Let me see if Pianki done showed back up again. Mr. Pianki, are you there? I know this wasn't your type of show today. All right. He got off doing whatever. All right. The beautiful and vivacious Sister Ngoni.
Great show, Mr. Talk. Thanks for inviting me. You guys have a good evening.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And, of course, the one and only Beasley.
Yeah, it was an interesting show. It was interesting to dig in deep and learn more about her. She's a spectacular woman. She's a spectacular woman, and I'm glad people that have certain biases that Maya Angelou wouldn't have conscribed to at all because she didn't, can still appreciate her. Because I wonder if she were to be speaking on this show, when some of the things get said, I wonder what Maya Angelou's opinion would be about some of the things that are said.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. We'll see. Whatever that means, Beasley. But okay. All right, hold on. Let me get Akeem in here. He just brought something to my attention. So, Akeem, you there, man?
Absolutely. Okay. Man, this is incredible. That's all I can say. To just have a moment to really learn and to experience Dr. Maya Angelou has been amazing. I have a quote what was quoted by her on one of the different searches that I did, and it stated that her words and actions continue to stir our souls, energize our bodies, liberate our minds, and heal our hearts. I totally agree that and then some about Maya Angelou, and I'd love to continue to talk about giants like Maya and hopefully in the future even Angela Davis and many more. We have so many dynamic people that we can touch on. Mm.
All right, thank you. And we get together and make that happen, because I think there's a lot we still left out there that we haven't even begin to scratch the surface. So, yeah, we'll go ahead and do that. And like you say, with Angela Davis and oh, man, there's so many of them out there. Woo, it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a good one. So we'll get together and make some things happen, all right? Because, you know, you and Antoinette, y'all asked me the same thing. So I know what we need to do now. All right. So thank you, sir. I appreciate it. All right, y'all. That was going to do it for me. I do appreciate everybody joining us today. It has been fun. You know, hey, everybody who called in and participated. I know this was a different show than what we usually have, but sometimes you just have to slow down and, you know, and just pay tribute to some people. You know, unfortunately, you know, she had to pass before we got to that point. But hopefully we've learned from this and we can move on to a little bit better. Do it while they're living. Ain't that what James Cleveland used to say? Give me my flowers while we live, while I'm living, instead of when I'm dead. I think Antoinette know that song. So I think that's what we'll start doing from now on. But anyway, it's been fun, man, and I appreciate it. I appreciate all of you, because without your show wouldn't be no good. That show it wouldn't be as good as it is. All right, so tomorrow, Freedom Friday, hey, whatever you want to talk about, you bring the topic, I'll just moderate and throw my 3% in too, of course. because that's the way I am. All right, so just remember, keep smiling, show appreciation, forgive with an open heart, and first make sure you're forgiving yourself, and learn to laugh at yourself, because if you can laugh at yourself, then heck, it don't even matter what else anybody bring at you. And yeah, I know, I got to work on some, like my angel said, I am human. Some things I got to work on, because, you know, right now there's a couple other people that are just not getting, they just not going to get it right now. Y'all know what I'm talking about. But it's been fun. I appreciate it. Tomorrow, 2 p.m. Central, 3 Eastern, 12 Pacific, 1 Mountain Time, I'll be here. Hope to see you too. All right, it's been a good one. See y'all tomorrow. I'm out of here.
Bye-bye.